This is Monitor Second Hour, Monitor at Radio Central New York. Your communicator, Clifton Fadiman. It's 5 o'clock here in New York, give or take 10 seconds or so. Early afternoon in San Francisco. Morning mists are still clinging to the waters of Pearl Harbor. In the next 60 minutes, Monitor will swing aboard one of the world's greatest liners now in mid-ocean, the SS United States. We'll ride with a giant trans-world airliner somewhere between New York's Idlewild Airport and London. We'll go to a Greenwich Village nightclub for live Dixieland Monitor music and pace the corridors of San Quentin Prison. Now, Don Russell and the Monitor headlines.
Bonn, Germany. Chancellor Adenauer arrives in Washington tomorrow for talks with President Eisenhower and Big Three foreign ministers. Detroit. General Motors appears headed for agreement with auto workers before a midnight strike deadline. Washington. Senator McClellan calls for investigation of nest of grafters in military procurement. Le Mans, France. Mike Hawthorne, British driver, wins Le Mans 24-hour race as death toll in sports car crash reaches 85. Those are the Monitor headlines.
Now we check Bonn, Germany. Hello, Bob McCormick in Bonn.
This is McCormick.
Jim Fleming in New York. Joe Harsh is in Washington, Bob. We want to know why Adenauer is coming to the United States.
Well, I think we have to remember that when Adenauer first planned this trip, it was just a routine matter. He'd come over and talk about various non-critical problems. But the trip became much more important when the Big Four meeting at the summit became definite, finally. And then the Russians sprang this surprise invitation to come to Moscow. So today, when Adenauer actually took off, his visit had assumed absolutely monumental international importance. And the chancellor, I might tell you, was obviously on edge when he got on his plane tonight from an airport over near Cologne. He was asked where his next trip would be, and with a pleasant smile for Adenauer, he replied that it would be from his home on the other side of the Rhine to the chancellery here in Bonn. Then a representative of the German television asked bluntly, with the cameras right on the chancellor, whether Adenauer would go to Moscow. And Adenauer became very annoyed and later, I'm told, severely scolded the television reporter, telling him in effect that he, Adenauer that is, would decide what was used on the state-operated television and not any mere reporter. So actually, it's a very edgy thing at the moment, I imagine.
So Adenauer's on the way. Hello, Joe Harsh in Washington.
Yeah, right here, Jim.
What are they going to talk to Adenauer? What do they want to say to him? What do they want him to say to them in Washington?
Jim, I think the only way I can answer that question is to say that Washington is going to do a great deal more listening than talking. This German situation, I think, is most nearly now like some people who built a ship and launched it and sent it on its maiden voyage. We built this West German ship. We built it on a very interesting basis. The whole idea from the beginning was to build a Germany we could trust. And so the first reaction here, official government reaction, when the news came in that Adenauer had been invited to Moscow, was to say, we trust him. And everybody here is saying, we trust him with earnestness and hope and fingers crossed as well. And when Adenauer comes here, they're going to sit down and say, now, you're wonderful. We worked happily with you. We know we can work with you some more. What are you going to do? And they're going to sit down and listen to what he thinks. This has been going on for about a month now, listening to Adenauer. His advice has been coming back here, and a great many, most of the planning here has been based on Adenauer's own advice and his own estimate of Russia.
Thanks, Joe. Is that figure with you, Bob and Bonn?
Well, yes, roughly, except that I think probably the people at home are a little bit inclined to overlook the fact that Adenauer, because of domestic political pressures, almost has to go to Moscow.
Oh, that's recognized, Bob.
It is.
Yeah, we know that. He's got to go.
Gentlemen, Monitor has to go to Detroit now. We just have the signal in. Thank you both. We'll wait Adenauer's arrival. In Detroit, Monitor has a microphone outside the conference room between the UAW and General Motors. Strike deadline tonight, midnight. Now to WWJ Detroit and Carl Cederberg.
Our Monitor microphone is located in the fifth floor corridor of the General Motors building in Detroit. Down the hall to our left, some 75 feet, the GM contract negotiations continue. Negotiators, who've appeared in the corridor from time to time, appear optimistic, though they say little. Some 50 to 60 weary reporters and cameramen patrol the hall, awaiting the break. The break Monitor will bring to you as soon as it occurs. This is Carl Sederberg, now back to Monitor in Radio Central, New York.
Say, friends, did you ever get a telegram like this? Having a wonderful time, fishing is great, plan to stay 3 more days. Please wire $50 fast. Well, there's just one thing to do in a case like that. Go to your nearby Western Union office and flash the 50 by telegraphic money order, of course. Send money. Telegraphic money orders can be sent in any amount, anywhere, any time of the day or night. What's more, you can include, and we do mean money, because Western Union gives the other person cash right in the office. So, next time you get an SOS for cash, you remember what I told you.
Send it! Western Union, Western Union! Western Union, Western Union! It's wise to wire!
Monitor Sports. Baseball scores to this moment in the National League. First game of 2, Chicago Cubs 9, Brooklyn Dodgers 5. Second game, the Chicago Cubs. So the Cubs and the Dodgers just starting. No report on that yet. First game out of 2, the St. Louis Cardinals 3, New York Giants 8. Still in the National League, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Giants are just starting. Second game. First game of 2 in the National League, Milwaukee Braves, Pittsburgh Pirates 5. That's final. Milwaukee Braves 3, Pittsburgh Pirates 2. Fifth inning. And first game out of 2, Cincinnati Reds 8, Philadelphia Phillies 12. That's final. And the second game between the Cincinnati Reds and the Philadelphia Phillies, that's just underway now. We'll have some reports on that for you soon. First game out of 2 in the American League. New York Yankees 2, the Cleveland Indians 10. That's final. The New York Yankees 1, the Cleveland Indians nothing. Bottom of the first. First game out of 2, the Senators nothing, the Chicago White Sox 1. That is final. Second game between the Senators and the Chicago White Sox is not yet underway. First game between the Baltimore Orioles and the Kansas City Athletics. Orioles 1, Kansas City Athletics 1. Playing at the top of the 6th. And in the single game between the Detroit Tigers and the Boston Red Sox, that is postponed because of rain.
Kip, you're a fine sportscaster.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Now, we have monitored those baseball scores at exactly not quite seven minutes past the hour. Less than 9,000 minutes till Father's Day. Buy Dad precisely what he wants. By Gruen, the Precision Watch.
Monitor weather over the nation. Drizzle is dampening much of the east, while it is fair and warm west of the Rockies. Light rain extends from the Missouri Valley eastward to New England, and from the northern Great Lakes, south to Georgia and Alabama. It is cool throughout the Midwest and Mississippi Valley and along the West Coast. Temperatures range from a high of 86 at Phoenix, Arizona, to a chill 40 at Houghton, Michigan. Readings in the low 50s prevail from the Montana Rockies, south to Oklahoma, and east to the Ohio Valley.
That was Miss Monitor giving us the Monitor weather. Miss Monitor, fair and warmer. Monitor Music. Chicago, Illinois is the second biggest city in the country. It's the home of the White Sox and the Cubs, and it had the biggest fire since Nero played that nasty trick on Rome's fire insurance companies. It's the western terminus of the New York Central Railroad, and hog butcher to the world, as Carl Sandburg said. Right now in Chicago, they're standing by to send us some of the sweetest music this side of Guy Lombardo. The music of Whitey Burquist.
Thank you.
Monitor book review. Joyce Carey's a Vermont-looking sort of man with a sharp nose, a chin that might have been carved from granite, and a way with words that's long since made him a writer to be reckoned with. Harper's has just published the final novel of a trilogy. It's called Not Honor More, the story of a liberal politician. How good a novel is it? That's a Monitor question for a distinguished book reviewer. Listening time, 2 minutes, 20 seconds.
This is Joseph Henry Jackson, literary editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. I'd like to tell you briefly about the new novel by the Anglo-Irish writer Joyce Carey. The title, Not Honor More. It comes from the 17th century poet Richard Lovelace, I could not love thee, dear, so much, loved I not honor more. Carey has been writing for about 25 years. About 5 years ago, his novel, The Horse's Mouth, was a book of the month. That one sold some 175,000 copies, and the reading public discovered Carey. What they discovered and what they liked was a writer with an eager interest in people. He wrote brilliantly, and he plainly had a wonderful appetite for life. In fact, he was like a fine, hearty breath right out of the 19th century. And readers who were a little tired of so much depressing post-war fiction, those readers concluded Carey was their man. His new one, Not Honor More, concludes a trilogy that the author began 3 years ago with A Prisoner of Grace and carried on with Accept the Lord. It's about people in politics in England at a very touchy time, the time of the general strike in the middle 1920s. The chief character in the first two are also in this one, Chester Nimmo, the expedient politician, his one-time wife Nina, who afterward married Jim Latter, and Latter himself, who tells the story. This book ends the trilogy, for at the end of the novel, Nina and Nimmo are both dead, and Jim Latter is charged with murder. The events, you see, reflect what Mr. Carey is saying. The world is full of political phonies. People believe their promises for a while, but now and then they wake up. Jim Latter woke up. So if you like a moral with your fiction, you've got one here. Actually, though, the best reason for reading Mr. Carey is not the moral. You read him really because, as somebody once said, his characters are so deplorably human. They are indeed. Which reminds me, someone once wrote, he was talking about the novels of Anthony Trollope, wrote that those novels are so open, so spacious, you can walk around in them with your hat on. Well, so you can in everything Mr. Carey writes, too. But there is so vigorous a wind of reality blowing through Mr. Carey's books that when you do walk around in them with your hat on, well, you'd better hold on to it. May I give you the title again? Not Honor More by Joyce Carey.
Next, the Monitor Snapshot. It is feeding time at the Zoological Gardens in Detroit, Michigan. And for an on-the-spot account of this fascinating scene, we take you to our correspondent in the Lion House at the Detroit Zoo. Go ahead, Grimsley Martin at the Lion House. Go ahead, Grimsley Martin at the Lion House. We regret we are unable to establish contact with our correspondent in the Lion House.
This is Monitor, going places and doing things. Take one.
Monitor at exactly 16 minutes past the hour. Monitor's Man of the Week, Nehru, Indian Prime Minister, visiting Moscow today, holder of the balance of power in the newly awakened East. Monitor assigned reporter Vincent Sheehan to keep us informed about Asia. He's been reporting from Asia. We'll continue to do so. Mr. Sheehan discussed Nehru for Monitor, answered two questions about the man he knows so well. Why this big reception for Nehru, inasmuch as he jails Indian communists? And we asked Sheehan, in brief, what sort of person is he?
It is true that Nehru has jailed large numbers of communists in India under the emergency regulations called Defense of the Realm. But he has done so not because of their philosophy, but because they broke the public peace in one way or another. Nehru therefore stands for a freedom as untrammeled as it is possible to get in an organized state. And along with that freedom, he has attempted and is attempting by successive five-year plans to bring up Indian production in agriculture, to restore land to cultivation, and to encourage industry. His first five-year plan, as everybody knows, has been a great success. And for the first time in modern history, India not only has rice enough for itself, but actually some for export. Nehru has natural elegance, poise, humor, grace, a deft and supple intelligence, a happy knack of being able to talk to almost anybody. He talks, moves, and laughs freely. He is obviously a perfectly free man. Nehru's way involves self-discipline within freedom, sacrifices made voluntarily, and is above all dedicated to nonviolence as a ruling principle. The nonviolent principle to which Nehru again declared his allegiance at Bandung, the principle of Mahatma Gandhi, is the direct intellectual opposite of communism. Anti-communism of the militant kind is much more like communism than either of them is like the nonviolence of Gandhi. For in the long run, whatever help may be given from the United States or elsewhere to the free countries of this continent, it is Asia itself which must choose between development by free choice and development in chains. This is Vincent Sheehan speaking.
Vincent Sheehan reporting from India for Monitor. Incidentally, an Indian diplomat, Krishna Menon, is going to talk with President Eisenhower and Secretary Dulles in Washington on Tuesday. Clifton Fetterman.
The West has Boulder Dam and Hoover Dam. Chicago has Art Van, at the moment holding forth in Monitor's music room. Their song, Benny's Bugle. Don't call us, we'll call you. To Chicago and the Monitor music of the Art Van Dam Quintet. Thank you.
brightening the airwave lengths from Chicago. That was Art Van Dam. And now, back to New York.
Now Monitor goes corn husking to Berlin, not for news this time, but for Crazy Otto. As far as Germany is concerned, the biggest thing to hit piano playing since Chopin. Crazy Otto is known to most of us largely through a spread in Life magazine. What's he crazy about? Well, mostly he's crazy about Otto. Listening time, 1 minute, 47 seconds.
We've come to Berlin, Germany, for our Monitor audience to meet Crazy Otto. Perhaps you can tell our NBC Monitor audience a little bit about how the Crazy Otto music styling came into being.
Well, it was just for fun that I sat down one day on a very old upright piano and played a little bit for myself. As Fritz Schulzreichel, I'm playing a more serious style.
Well, that's what I wanted to tell our NBC audience. The reason you want the alias, or you wanted the alias, is that you were and are still today one of Germany's finest concert pianists. United States, we of course know of it firsthand.
Well, I got a lot of mail addressed to Crazy Otto Heidelberg, Crazy Otto Mannheim, Crazy all part of the country, and they address their letters and they all reach me. That's the funniest thing.
A monitor back from outer space. For some 2 hours after sunset tonight, the planet Jupiter will be visible, but barely so, in the western... Visible, but barely so, in the western section of the sky. About to hear a radio signal that has originated on Jupiter. An impulse has traveled some 400 million miles from the planet to us. Frankly, it's very hard to hear. It was a long trip. You'll notice first a heavy sound of static, then, very faintly, a higher note over the static. Listen closely now. Here it comes. A radio signal thrown some 400 million miles across space. This is the sound of Jupiter. Sound was isolated a short time ago by two scientists, Pat Franklin and Bernard Burke from the Carnegie Institution in Washington. They developed a so-called radio telescope.
A device that picks up the electric impulses from space. You know, it's long been known that stars set up impulses that can be measured. We don't mean Marilyn Monroe. But this is the first signal ever recorded from a planet. Possibly it's the result of a giant storm in the planet's atmosphere. Listen again now. The high note is the signal from Jupiter.
Tip, that sounded like our switch to John Cameron Swayze in Istanbul about an hour ago.
We heard Jupiter at exactly 5:25:30. Less than 9,000 minutes till Father's Day. Buy Dad precisely what he wants. Buy Gruen the precision watch. Monitor checks Edinburgh Castle. You know, when a man gets an official job in Britain, it's not always a simple matter. This weekend, famed Edinburgh Castle got a new governor, Lieutenant General Horatius Murray. Now he arrives to pick up the keys. Monitor with NBC, with BBC goes to Edinburgh Castle.
The Lord Lion King of Arms.
What comes the Lord Lion King of Arms to do at the gates of Edinburgh Castle?
In the name and authority of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, and in the name and authority of Lieutenant General Horatius Murray, Companion of the Most Honorable Order of the Bath, Companion of the Distinguished Service Order, Her Majesty's Governor of Edinburgh Castle, here present, bearing Her Majesty's commission to that effect, we do lawfully summon, warn, and charge you, the Commandant and Garrison of Edinburgh Castle, to make patent the port and gates of the same, and therein to give admittance unto Her Majesty's said Governor, and under for deliver the keys of the said castle, all of which we do hereby command you strictly to do and forthwith to perform, with certification that an ye fail, ye shall answer at your highest peril. God save the Queen.
Come, Governor of Edinburgh Castle, here are the keys and watch your step. Monitor goes dancing, this time with Benny Goodman. It's his famous Stompin' at the Savoy. Coming up on Monitor, interviews with Marilyn Monroe, Louis Bromfield, Victor Borga. We'll hear Bob Hope and Bob and Ray. In 30 minutes, we'll monitor Meet the Press. Today, West German Ambassador James Conant answering the big question of the week. What's the meaning of the Russian bid to Dr. Adenauer? News and music, live and transcribed, all coming up on Monitor.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.
This is Frank Gallup, and in 3 seconds, more Monitor music. Stan Kenton's I'm Going Mad for a Pad. Thank you. That was Russian Lullaby, and again, Stan Kenton, this time I am going mad for a pad.
Been knocking on doors from morning till night. No rooms for rent. Prospects ain't bright. I'm going mad for a pad. Ain't there no rooms to be had? Why must my feet have to creep through the streets till they're beat? Till they're bowed with defeat. I'm going mad for a pad. Ain't there no bed to be had? Don't need no towel, need no bath, and the paint can be inked. I won't fall in a faint unless I can express on a home-cooked meal or three. I guess I'm in a mess. Even the city jail sets grim, frail, frail. I'm going mad for a pad. Ain't there no bug to be had? On and on. Gotta work for a living. I'm a worn-out walking
Monitor, 25 minutes before the hour, upcoming trips to San Quentin, the SS United States, a plane in mid-ocean, and the music of Jimmy McPartland. Coming up on Monitor.
Here's a friendly challenge to every V8 owner listening now. No matter what make car you own, your Nash dealer challenges you to test drive the greatest performing car on the road, the new Nash Ambassador with its terrific new Jetfire V8 engine. Here's the ultimate in V8 power, years ahead of the pack in design. You'll want to test its lightning go, marvel at its velvet smoothness. Try it. Compare it with any car, anywhere, on any hill, on any road. It can zoom you from standstill to 60 miles per hour in just 13.5 seconds by your watch. It can rocket you up a long, steep grade without even breathing hard. And there's absolutely no roughness, no roar. With twin ultramatic drive, Jetfire V8 power is just sheer velvet, from go to any speed you name. Drive this hot new Ambassador at your Nash dealers now. Get a new standard of judgment for performance and value. Call your Nash dealer today for your greatest thrill on wheels.
This is Monitor. We go now, live, inside the walls of San Quentin Prison in California. Listening time, 6 minutes. There, the story of two inmates is unfolding according to an ancient pattern. Now to San Quentin Prison and Walter McGraw.
It has been said that there are two ways to get out of San Quentin. One way is by execution. I'm with a man who has been sentenced to the gas chamber. Tell me, why were you sentenced?
For murder, first degree.
What was it like to hear the fatal words in court?
It's like something in a nightmare. Like a bad dream.
Something you can't believe.
Something you can't believe. It can't be helping. It can't be happening to you.
When do you start believing that it can happen?
few days later after you've arrived on Condemned Row.
Tell me about Condemned Row. What did it look like?
Condemned Row is on the top floor of the north cell block of San Quentin Prison. There are approximately 35 to 36 cells all along one tier. You have a screen cage across a corridor where an armed guard makes his rounds every 15 minutes.
What's Condemned Row feel like?
Condemned Row is a place of tension, so thick that you could cut it with a knife. It's a place where men are waiting to die.
You received a stay of execution, didn't you?
Yes.
How far before the actual date did that come through?
21 hours. About 3 hours before they would have taken me down to the death watch cell.
What did it feel like 24 hours before the time of execution?
You're in a semi-state of shock and hoping against hope that something will happen at the last minute to prevent the execution.
What's it feel like when the stay comes through?
Well, there again, you have a reaction that take place 2 or 3 days later when you finally get to realizing just how come you came to going, how close you came to going.
Then, when the stay doesn't work and again you're condemned, what happens then?
It's a lost, hopeless feeling.
What finally happened to you?
The governor of the state of California commuted my sentence to life imprisonment.
This means that eventually you can get out, right?
I'm eligible for parole after 7 years served.
And what are you going to do after the 7 years are up, or whenever you get your parole? Do you have plans?
I plan to attend the university if such a thing is possible.
What do you think of the death sentence? Do you think it's right or not?
Definitely not. But however, I'm afraid that my opinion is slightly biased.
I would imagine so. Another way to get out of San Quentin is by parole. We switch now to the yard where Peg McGraw is going to talk to a man who will hit the streets tomorrow.
It's yard out time at San Quentin, and I'm sitting in the yard on a bench here with a young man. How old are you?
27.
You're 27 years old. It's interesting in the yard at San Quentin because sitting here, we see in the distance the mountains. They're all enveloped in fog. And way past the mountains, there's San Francisco. When you look at San Francisco, what does that mean to you right now?
Freedom.
Freedom. And when do you get your freedom?
Tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning you're going on parole.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you like to tell us why you were sent here?
Well, I committed a robbery. Thought it was the easiest way to get money at the time.
And for how long were you sentenced at that time?
1 year to life.
How did you feel when you first came in?
Bitter.
What does bitter mean?
Well, it's hard to describe exactly. Except that the word bitter covers it all.
Cynical, unhappy, not believing, all those things?
Everything.
Everything. You're married?
Yes, ma'am.
Have you any children?
Two.
You have two children. How long were you in San Quentin before you came up before the parole board?
18 months.
You were here 18 months. And what happened in that meeting?
Well, I was postponed 6 months.
What kind of questions did they ask you at that time?
My feelings toward my crime, what plans I had regarding institution, school.
What kind of plans did you have?
Of learning a trade here.
And did you learn a trade?
I learned a trade as automobile mechanic.
Are you a good automobile mechanic?
I think so.
And then when did you next come up before the parole board?
I went back a year later, and at that time I got my parole date.
How did you feel just before you went in the second time, just before you went before the parole board?
Nervous, scared.
Is it a frightening experience?
Very much so.
How long did it take after you went before the board to get the answer?
At that time, it took 3 days over the weekend.
And then how did you feel when you got the yes?
Like someone took 200 pounds off my back.
This man we will meet again later. Now this is Walter McGraw reporting for Monitor in San Quentin.
One hour from now, Monitor returns inside San Quentin Prison. The time, 17 minutes before the hour.
Monitor Music. Let's skip to Chicago now and pick up 3 minutes of Whitey Burquist and his 23-piece band, the song Brazilian Sleigh Bells. To Chicago and the Monitor Music of Whitey Burquist.
Tom Mersine in Chicago applauding for you, Whitey Burquist, and the...
Monitor vignette, listening time 20 seconds. The account of President Eisenhower at the West Point graduation last week reminded me of a story I once heard from a cadet. He said it was true. You know, it was a parade formation, the corps lined up like so many statues. One unfortunate cadet had one button that was slightly loose. The inspecting officer saw it and his face turned red. "What do you think you're doing?" he shouted. "Sunbathing?" This is Monitor, going places, doing things. Take one. Monitor weather. At this moment, tomorrow's weather is scheming with the winds that blow off the Rockies, the heat that rises off the plains of Texas, the moisture-heavy air over the Great Lakes. Will it blow fair or foul, hot or cold? The patient and scientific gentlemen at the Weather Bureau are best able to answer this. Monitor checks in at Washington and the National Weather Bureau.
From the many charts and reports available here at the National Weather Analysis Center, it can be seen that the most important weather movement in the last 24 hours has been the advance of a line of showers through the Atlantic states and out into the ocean. The area of low pressure that is connected with this advance, however, is sluggish, continuing to drift slowly to the northeast of the Great Lakes. This saucer-shaped low is causing cloudy and showery weather throughout a large area which extends from the Western Lakes region to New England and southward into Tennessee. Filling in on the rest of the large-scale picture, an elongated mound of higher pressure extends through the northern plains into Texas with a valley of lower pressure over the northern Rockies. Showers are now occurring in a bunch-like form, one in the New England states, another clump in the northern Rockies, with a third area in Arizona. One trend is now apparent, however. With the spread of this shower activity, and latest reports showing showers breaking out in Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia. Temperature-wise, the cloudiness connected with the showers has held afternoon readings down well below normal. Chicago, for instance, reported a temperature of 53 in mid-afternoon. Elsewhere, 50 and 60 degree temperatures were reported in the central plains, near normal 70s in Idaho and Nevada, with a warming trend again in Texas, the deep south, and far southwest. High temperature so far this afternoon? Alice, Texas, and Yuma, Arizona, tied with 97s. Well, that's it for now, but first here's a little weather extra for you. The latest report from Moscow, a chilly 41 degrees. This is Bill McMurray, and now back to Monitor in Radio Central, New York.
Monitor on an upbeat. A couple of miles south by east of Times Square, as the bar flies, stretches Greenwich Village, once a quaint little village on the outskirts of New York, now just quaint. Currently, it's the scene of a delightful outdoor art exhibit in the area ringing Washington Square. The village offers two things these days to those who make their way down its narrow and history-haunted streets, music and food, and excellent in both departments is Nick's on 7th Avenue. To Nick's in New York and the Monitor music of Jimmy McPartland.
This is Fred Collins here at Nick's, and here is Jimmy McPartland.
Thank you, Fred, and good afternoon, folks. We're going to kick around a little Dixieland number here called the Wolverine Blues for you.
Here's your taste of Dixieland with Jimmy McPartland from here at Nick's in the Village of New York City. Now back to Monitor in Radio Central, New York.
Jimmy's music slips by easy, and so does time. Less than 9,000 minutes till Father's Day. Buy Dad precisely what he wants. Buy Gruen, Gruen, the precision watch.
If you were with us 1 hour ago on our simulcast, you saw that TWA plane take off for England. By now, she's some 300 miles out to sea. The monitor transmitter's aboard. Let's monitor this Atlantic crossing. Hello, TWA Ambassador. Hello. We're calling all the ships in the air, and we're getting all the ships at sea on monitor. That's the United States. Hello, United States, as long as you've dropped in on us. Hello, United States. All right, let's try another channel and see if we can get the TWA flight. All the ships at sea are coming into monitor, and monitor is not getting to all the ships at sea. However, monitor continues to cover the world. This time, it's strike-bound Britain. You know, over there are no trains running at all, and most of that island is having quite a time because of the strike, and while there's a heavy premium on autos and bicycles and ships at sea and planes in the air, most Britons are now rediscovering the art of walking. Let's see if we can get in touch with walking. Try the BBC and see how the strike's going. Come in, BBC.
With most of Britain's railways still strike-bound, people are having to resort to many unusual ways of transport in order to get to work. One man who relies on his own feet is Leonard Toms of Ilford, London. Leonard Toms runs to and from his office every day, a round trip of 17 miles. Here he is in an interview with John Ennis.
Well, I hope you've got enough breath to talk to me, yes, Mr. Toms. How long does it take you to run to the office every day?
Roughly 55 minutes. That's as against 45 by conventional means.
You'd never thought of doing this before the strike started?
No, I couldn't bring myself to run up through the Mile End or the Whitechapel Road.
No.
But after Whitson, I thought, well, I'll take my running kit with me. And then I found the crush on the two.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, that's it. I'll run now for the finish of the strike.
And you've got your clothes in the office?
I've got my clothes in the office.
Yeah. You're no stranger to running, are you?
Oh, no. I'm a member of Blackheath Harriers, and I've been running seriously for 34 years.
Did you find this a strain, running to the office?
Oh, no. I've got a fairly strenuous schedule. For instance, on Monday last, I ran 23 miles.
Mm.
Tomorrow morning, I'm booked for 25.
Mm.
And I do a bit of gardening in the evening.
Oh. Did you find people took much notice of you this week, running through the city streets?
Well, the policemen are beginning to know me a little and say good morning. And then, of course, you have the banister and the Chataway fans in the East End.
Had a little encouragement. Yeah. What about your colleagues in the office? Are they going to follow in your footsteps?
One or two of the younger ones have shown interest, and also some of my younger club members.
Hmm.
Apparently they think if old Toms can do it at 42 years of age, well, we ought to have a go.
Yes, well, I congratulate you on your solution to the traffic problem, Mr. Toms.
That was Leonard Toms, a London office worker who is running to work every day.
A man like that should be rewarded. Well, we've been trying the ships at sea, the United States and others, and we've been trying as well the TWA flight, and we can't get in touch with them, and we're living dangerously, but we do hope that Monitor gets in touch with Marilyn Monroe this evening. We will indeed. This is Monitor, and the end of the second hour. Well, Kip, Frank Gallup, and Don Russell are here. We have communicators who have barely been heard from.
That's right. I hope we'll hear from them. How do you like this first hour, James?
Well, I think it was quite interesting. We had some disasters. We had some nervousness. We got a few places. The tape was rewound on one spot.
But we had a good time.
But we had a good time.
You want to know what's coming up next?
Yes, I do.
All right. Coming up next now, Meet the Press. On the grill, James B. Conan, ambassador to West Germany. We'll monitor this right off the TV circuit. Stay with us, too, for a chat with Marilyn Monroe, we hope, Louis Bromfield, and Victor Borge.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.